ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, May 18th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Friday, Melody.
TGIF, it certainly is, and I'm ready for it. I'm going to have to work tomorrow, but so actually tomorrow will be my Friday. Saturday will be Friday, but anyway, great week this week. A lot of things that are going on here and around the world, and we're going to talk about those things. But first, I am going to do the market report as always. And we're looking at gold today. Yay, we finally had an up day. Hold $2.50. $1,293.70. But again, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great buying opportunity. Many of you did take advantage of the special that I was running on the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece. I didn't count up the number, but we're close to 250. That has been sold, so it was a great deal, and I'm beginning to see that my buyers are kind of like, go on to something else, please, but it is a great buy, and I appreciate each and every one of you that purchased the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold pieces. Silver today was up a penny at $16.52. Platinum was up five at $889. Palladium was up, was down. I mean, I got all excited about my $10 Liberty gold pieces. Uh-huh. Silver was up a penny today at $16.52. Platinum was down $5 at $889. And palladium was down 13 at $972. The paper markets today, the Dow was up 18 points at 24,715. The NASDAQ was... I did that wrong again too, didn't I? The Dow was up 2 points at 24,715. The NASDAQ was down 28 points at 7,354. The S&P was down 7 at 2,713.
Yes.
All right. I got it right. I got all excited, and it's Friday, and 10-year yield, 3.07%, so that was down 0.04. Euro is down also 0.17 at 118. And I guess I did even forget, it's been a long week. And you didn't correct me, Dave. You didn't say, hey, Mel, what's the U.S. dollar doing today? It is stronger by 0.17, yes?
Oh, never mind.
What's that?
No, I was going to ask you how the U.S. dollar did today.
Well, let me tell you, it was up 0.17 at 93.64.
And how about the fear index?
Oh, let me go back to that screen. The fear index today is number 53, so we're kind of just in there at neutral. Mm. And I'm going to be all over the page today, and I'll have to give the market report a little later on in this program. Crude oil was down 15 cents today at 71.34. And there's a couple of things before we get into the financial news. I just wanted to make a couple mentions today. I'm sure everyone is well aware. We made the announcement. It was breaking news this morning as we were doing the 10 o'clock program, Power Talks, when I was with Beth Ann. And there was another school shooting, 10 dead at a high school. They found pipe bombs, pressure cookers. Perhaps there was two of them. And you know, it's just trying to figure out what goes through these kids' minds. But, you know, that's another show and so forth. And we're here to talk about the economy. And but again, it's and the pictures of these kids, it's, you know, it just wonders what goes through their minds. There's a plane crash in Cuba, a 737 down shortly after takeoff. So if you go to Cuba, you want to make sure you get there by a boat. you know, you want to cruise to Cuba. I'm not so sure you want to fly there, but there were 104 passengers. A very high number have died. So it was a domestic flight, and this is the third of fleet that was grounded over safety issues. And I don't know exactly what airline. I guess it was a Cuba airline. So There was also a man had opened fire down at a Trump Miami resort, and they killed him. He didn't come out alive on that one. And there's just so many crazy things that are going on, and it's hard to know where we're all headed, in what direction that we're headed. I did see, I don't think you had this, was a quickie. A House rejected an $867 billion farm bill today after spending days negotiating with key conservatives in an attempt to pass the bill without the support of the Democrats. Lord knows what was all attached to that, but
Big cuts in the SNAP program, food stamps, as it used to be known, that apparently was caught up in these negotiations. I haven't seen the reports of a couple of the House members who would have ended up voting no, probably in very tight midterm election races this November, is my guess.
There was who is this guy? Meadows, House Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows, RNC. He says, 76% of this farm bill has nothing to do with farms. It's like, well, what else is new, But that's just kind of interesting. It's the same different day. Different day, same old,
Another
but
day, another drama.
yeah, but 76% of this bill has nothing to do with farms. Even if it was 50%, give the, but no, I mean it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And what do you think, Illini veto?
I'm not a big fan of it. It's for it depends in part on how it would be structured and what would be subject to the line item veto. In the past, when it was first brought up, well, probably not first, but when it was last, or when it was somewhat seriously considered during the Clinton administration, Newt Gingrich was talking about, I think more of a tactic to get it possibly, passed as just applying to non-defense discretionary spending. And that's just such a small portion of the budget. It almost renders the line item veto as, useless, and somewhat of a bad joke. Now, if it's applied as much as it can across the board, except for, the so-called mandatory spending, that's another story. And by that I mean if it includes defense spending, and perhaps there's a potential bigger bang for the buck. But I think there are other things that can be done, to make harder, or just as hard, to make Congress a little more responsive and accountable. But there are things they're being talked about now. I mean, campaign finance reform is probably, in my mind, the number one, thing to do after ending the, horrible practice of gerrymandering. But we can get into that at a later date. I'm sure you don't want to digress too much into that. But so my short answer is I'm not a big fan of line item vetoes at the federal level.
Well, then, well, I'd like to see term limits, but they're never going to do that either. So, these things, and they come and they go. There's a couple of leading economic indicators that were up for 6 straight months. The composite index of leading economic indicators gained for the 6th straight month in April. The Conference Board's leading index gained 0.4% to 109.4, matching the expectations of economists. What's this all mean? In April, stock prices and housing permits were the only negative contributors. whereas the labor market components, which made negative contributions in March, that improved. The measure, which looks at 10 key metrics of economic movement, jumped 0.3% to 109 in March, which followed a gain of 0.7% in February. And what they use this index for is to forecast global economic trends and take checks on the U.S. economy.
And here I thought checks weren't accepted.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
In other news, Melody, new applications for U.S. jobless benefits increased more than expected last week. At the same time, the number of Americans on unemployment rolls fell to its lowest level since 1973, that pointing to a diminishing slack in the labor market. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits rose 11,000 to a seasonally adjusted 222,000, that for the week ended May 12th. Claims for the prior week were unrevised. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast claims rising to 215,000 in the latest week, so actual claims exceeded that by, 7,000 roughly, give or take. Yeah, the labor market now is viewed as being close to or at full employment, with the job, I should say, viewed by the Fed and mainstream economists. There, as we talked about earlier in the week, different definitions of full employment or actual unemployment. You know, the as viewed by the Fed and as reported by the Labor Department, unemployment near a 17-and-a-half-year low now at 3.9%. We reported earlier in the week, I believe, Melody, that when you consider other factors, including those who are working just part-time, who'd like to be working full-time, and those who have just dropped out of the labor market, so to speak, because of, frustration and not being able to find a job, that putting it closer to 10% as opposed to 3.9. But hey, apples to apples, I guess this is the rate that we talk about.
Makes everyone feel good.
How about it? How about
all
it?
All warm and fuzzy there. But we're going to report a little bit on, I talked about it this morning, about how difficult it is still families with this so-called full employment aren't making ends meet. And there's some powerful numbers in there when we think that people are out there working and they still can't pay for the food, housing, they can't get ahead, and yet we're supposedly in this great economy. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And again, it shows that things just aren't equaling out. The numbers that they give us and what we compare them, I mean, one and one is not equaling two. I mean, come on. And but we live in such a busy time that people just pick out the good numbers. There was a record of 6.6 million unfilled jobs in March. That was according to government data that was published this week. That claims report also showed the number of people receiving benefits after an initial week of aid declined 87,000 to 1.71 million in the week ending May 5th, and this is the lowest again since 1973. And you know what, if you go back to a lot of these, to these reports, to the benefit reports, I mean, I think I looked it up to see when was the first time that we had these lowest levels since 1973. And it goes back quite a few years to where, the numbers have been to this level of 1973. I don't know what that means, but, it's just an interesting tidbit there.
Yep.
Dave.
Indeed.
But you also have Wall Street. They're a little optimistic. The first quarter earnings season was one of the strongest for the U.S. economy in years. And while the stock market showed little enthusiasm for the high sky growth, ratings and earnings and revenue, corporate executives were both optimistic about the future and skeptical that potential headwinds could come to pass. And, of course, Goldman Sachs' beige book or the investment bank's analysis of major themes and trends and earning calls was sort of the takeaway. Everyone talks about their results, their company's outlooks, and answer questions from the analysts who cover the company. According to Goldman, executives remained upbeat about the economic environment, and the consensus was that relatively strong economic growth should continue. And, you know, again, it's pie in the sky, as far as I believe, because it doesn't really matter what these economic numbers are if people can't make ends meet. How great of an economy is it?
It depends who you talk to. You know, according to the latest Bank of America Merrill Lynch survey, the ratio of fund managers who expect the global economy to be stronger in a year is at its lowest reading since February of 2016. Yet more than three quarters of surveyed investors said the stock market hadn't peaked yet, and 43% said the next recession won't start until 2020 or later. Wonder what numbers they've been looking at. Embodying that view was Owen Thomas, who's CEO of Boston Properties, who said that economic conditions to be healthy and relatively stable. While some executives, including Bill Parker, who's the chief risk officer of U.S. Bank Corp, said the economy was obviously in the late stage of expansion, his tone was generally one of cautious optimism. Now, Darren King, who's CFO of M&T Bank, added that when you look at the time since the last recession, it would suggest that we're way far along and that we're towards the end of the expansion, that is. Now, the biggest potential headwind cited by the analysts was uncertainty related to trade policy. Not a surprise there. Arthur Beatty, who's CFO of Southern Corporation, added that it was too soon to say what impact the trade issues would have on the macro level. Boeing, which, due to its large revenue exposure to China, would be among the stocks hit hardest by an escalation in tensions, was among the companies expressing that view. Now, many of the executives cited by Goldman praised free trade policies and urged Washington to avoid the protectionist ones. Melody?
Well, you know, we had the trade talks again begin. There was a second round of U.S.-China trade talks began yesterday. President Trump cast some doubt on a positive outcome after he said Beijing had become too spoiled and that his expectations for the negotiations were low. I tend to doubt it will be successful, he said. That's interesting because I hadn't followed the second round of these, and I didn't see his tweets or his interviews or whatever he did that he say that. So he's not very positive on that outcome with the interesting.
Looking to low expectations, I presume.
Yeah. And expectations, we're heading into a break right now. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back right after these few short commercials.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
How are you hearing?
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And going into the break, we were talking a little bit about trade talks that was started again yesterday, Section 2. We're going to talk a little bit about that in just a little bit. 1-800-375-4188 is the phone number for Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Please visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs. They're archived on a daily basis. And so if you missed one, you know where to go, dgscoins.com. And today I think we can still go through the $700, keep it at $700 for Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold pieces. So been a great week. Let's finish out the day with some great orders on those coins. They're great buys. If you purchase two, it'll include free shipping. And I want to thank each and every purchaser of these coins this week, and along with all the other items that was sold at Discount Gold and Silver. We appreciate all your business. We work very hard, and I hope it comes through with the way your orders are handled. So 1-800-375-4188. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of these funds go right back into these programs and other programs to keep people on the air, to keep people educated, so people can learn. And so a lot of when you buy coins, a large part of that profit goes right back into education and helping to get the word out and why it's so important. And we appreciate your support. I wanted to talk. I saw this article, Dave, about declining U.S. birth rates, and I wanted to talk about it since I saw it, and I haven't had the chance to. So thank you for making this part of the Brevity is Golden.
Well, my pleasure. This is an opportunity for you to do just that. This is this week's Brevity is Golden segment, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody, women in the U.S. gave birth last year at the lowest rate in 30 years. That's a trend that could weigh on economic growth in coming decades, according to some analysts. Our Center for Disease Control and Prevention's National Center for Health Statistics said yesterday that the number of U.S. babies born last year fell 2% from 2016 to 3.85 million. That's also a 30-year low. Births now have fallen for three straight years. The fertility rate dropped 3% last year to 60.2 births per 1,000 women who are age 15 through 44. An aging society has already weighed on economic growth in the U.S. in the past decade, with the vast baby boom generation now retiring and fewer young people replacing them. Thursday's data suggests that this trend is likely to continue. Economic growth, many people say, is generally driven by population growth, plus worker efficiency, both of which have slowed in the past decade in our country. As an economist at Oxford Economics, Kathy Bosjanchik, said that roughly 10 years ago, the number of Americans working or looking for work was about 1% annually. That's the growth. With birth rates declining, that figure has since fallen to about 0.3% growth rate. That essentially acts as a 0.7 percentage point drag on the U.S.'s long-run growth. The U.S. economy has grown at a 3% average annual rate since World War II, yet it hasn't reached that pace for, you know, a full calendar year since 2005. The baby boomers, as we know, first reached retirement age 10 years ago in 2008. Now, aside from fewer workers, an aging society can hold back growth because fewer people are buying homes, cars, and other costly purchases. Savings generally rise as people age and prepare for retirement. As elderly people live longer, they also slow their spending while in retirement. Now, most economists attribute the low interest rates and low inflation of the past decade in the U.S., Europe, and Japan, at least in part, to aging. In Japan, where adult diapers now outsell those for children, the impact of fewer births has kept growth nearly non-existent for more than two decades. And economic research earlier this year found that U.S. fertility fell sharply, roughly 9 months before the past three recessions. That suggests, again suggests, that such declines could signal economic downturns in the not-too-distant future. But Casey Buckles, who's an economic professor at Notre Dame, who conducted the research with two colleagues, said that recent such declines aren't sharp enough to point to a recession. Instead, she noted that fertility declines over the past 3 years have occurred mostly among women under 30, part of that millennial group. You know, it's possible that the Great Recession, she says, may have been something of a triggering event that caused people to be more intentional about their fertility. And that, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden. What do you think about some of that stuff?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons that we could point to. As you know, they always blame the baby boomers. You know, it's everything is our fault. You know, but certainly the but you have to really look at nations where you don't have this growth, where fertility is a problem, where we aren't having. I mean, just like what you said about look at Japan, where you know, their aging population, their growth is nearly non-existent, and I think we're going to see the same thing here. The world is changing, and there's lots of reasons. You read all the time where, you know, even video games to the food, the GMOs, all affect fertility rates. Could all have different types of, you know, impacts, abortions. So it truly is, you know, a disturbing trend. And you look at the millennials, you know, I don't know if 2000, the Great Recession, had anything to do with it, but, you know, certainly our economy, you know, these kids have, you know, student debt, and, you know, they, you know, focus on that, try to get that paid off to some degree. They're not starting families. I mean, I read an article where a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of them don't consider themselves an adult until they're 30. You know, and when we were kids, we were adults at 16, yeah. 18. You know, we wanted to drive. We wanted to work. We wanted to get out of the house. You know, we wanted to be adults. You know, some of us thought we were adults at, you know, younger than 16. But, you know, so there is a change. You see this change. And I don't think it's good. And it's, again, the future is, you know, it's part of aging also. You know, and I can put myself into my grandparents' shoes now, into where how they viewed the world. Now we're here, Dave.
I know.
Like, the world is changing, and I'm not so sure a lot of these changes are good, but who's going to listen to a bunch of old folks?
I know.
But it's the old folks who know what's going on. They get it, and they truly do see the future, or I should say, we see the future problems that this country faces. But anyway, Iraq, they had an election. It was held last weekend. We didn't, and they revealed a shock win for controversial anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, now in position to potentially determine much of the country's future. The Shia leader, who has railed against both U.S. and Iranian influence, could dramatically change the landscape for major powers that have invested heavily in Iraq. A firebrand religious leader with millions of loyal followers, he gained infamy shortly after the 2003 U.S.-led invasion by directing deadly attacks against American troops. He has shifted his focus to anti-corruption campaigns and advocating for Iraq's poor. And he's in a rare position of opposing both the U.S. and Iran. Several of his election rallies triggering chants of Iran out among his followers, voicing the desire for an Iraqi state run by Iraqis. Is this the end of America's presence? Is it too early to say? There was a political counselor who asked those questions to the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad from 2004 to 2006. I thought that Iraq, Dave, I thought Iraq and Iran were a little closer. Who does Iraq side with, other than other?
They're different factions within the country that side with various factions in other countries. I mean, it still seems, too much like coalitions of Sunnis versus coalitions of Shias.
Yeah.
And it's, part of possibly a lot of what prevents some longer-term stability in that country, much less region. I mean, how the Iraqi government's going to be formed in the coming months as a result of the elections is something that neighboring Iran is looking at very closely. I mean, Sadr didn't personally run for prime minister, so he can't actually, fulfill that role. But depending on the formation of the Iraqi parliament, which normally takes 90 days of negotiations among the various political blocks or factions, he could play a dominant role in choosing who does, and that could threaten Iran's interests. Most bets were on current Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi to win. He's a leader credited with leading the fight against ISIS and, effectively balancing ties with the U.S. and some of its neighbors, that is, Iraq's neighbors. His positive relationship with us has gained him distrust, not surprisingly, from Iran. Unfortunately, in that respect, Abadi finished in third place behind the Iranian-backed militia leader, al-Amiri, and that was an organization created by Iran during the 1980s to fight Saddam Hussein in the Iran-Iraq War. Amiri was among Tehran's favorites to win, and this dynamic could create a major rift in parliament between Iran loyalists and Sadr supporters. It's a very complex. It's so hard for, someone who doesn't follow this stuff all the time to be an effective analyst and spokesperson, if you will, on this subject, because events are changing. It seems like every day events and alliances, and it's just something that we need to pay close attention to. Because it is one of the biggest examples of geopolitical instability in the world, and certainly that uncertainty could give rise to an outbreak of another war at any time.
and so many other different places. And you know, it is, it's just speeding up, and you just see all this. I mean, I've been following this for a long time. And there would be certain geopolitical uprisings in one spot, you know, you'd get a little, you know, hot spot, and, you know, it'd wear itself out, and, you know, you'd come up with all these possible scenarios. And then another area, you know, and, you know, whether it created a war or whatever, you know, and then you'd have another area. And then now it's all these areas that are just burning, and it's... smoldering, at least, and it's just a matter of time until one of them's got to catch fire. And
I know. These shifting alliances and the increase in influence by China, and to, you know, a lesser extent, Russia and Syria, you know, gotta just complicate the situation on the ground for U.S. troops on the one hand, and for you know, the Iraqi and Afghanistan military leaders as well. Boy, I would not want to be there.
Well, it's and again, ladies and gentlemen, it's just one of these things that can, you know, propel gold to very unusual highs, and we're going to get there anyway.
Yeah.
Very sudden, yes. Let's see. Let's move on. China denied today that it was going to offer a package to slash the U.S. trade deficit by up to $200 billion. I don't know why anybody thought that they would go through with it. But this denial did come after China dropped an anti-dumping probe into U.S. sorghum imports as a gesture as top negotiators met in Washington. Conciliatory gesture. Officials said on Thursday that China was proposing trade concessions, increased purchases of American goods aimed at cutting the U.S. trade deficit with China by up to $200 billion a year. And that rumor is not true. "This I can confirm to you," said the Chinese foreign minister spokesman Liu Kang, told a regular news briefing. Chinese Vice Premier Liu He is in Washington this week for talks with U.S. officials. It's led by Steven Mnuchin, aimed at heading off a trade war between the two biggest economies.
Yeah, earlier today, China announced it was ending its sorghum investigation, which had effectively halted trading worth over $1 billion last year. And that really upset the global grain markets and spurred worries about rising costs domestically. The U.S. is China's dominant source of imported sorghum. That's a grass-looking grain product, particularly in states like Texas and Kansas that just so happen to lean toward the Republican Party, whose congressional majorities are under threat in midterm elections in November. So, you know, you not only can you not count out, you know, the political a part of this equation, you know, it could be in many ways the main consideration, certainly for some. Explaining the dropping of the sorghum investigation, China's commerce ministry said it would have a wide impact on consumer living costs and doesn't accord with the public interest. Now, getting to a $200 billion reduction in the U.S. Do I hear music in
yes,
the background?
Yes, you do.
Melody?
I'm not singing to you. You hear music. And we'll be heading into a break, and we'll be back for the third segment of the program today. We'll finish this up with some other things. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Mint State 62, $10 Liberty gold pieces, $700. You purchase two and you'll get free shipping. You'll receive performance, protection, and privacy with these coins. And again, as I mentioned throughout the week, anytime you can purchase two of them for the which would equal the same amount as a $20 gold piece, and you can buy them for the same price, it's a great time to be picking them up. And because they usually will sell much, much more than what the $20 gold piece will sell for. The smaller you go in the size of your gold, normally you'll pay more for that gold. So a great time to be picking them up, $700, 1-800-375-4188. Dave, in the beginning of the program, I had mentioned, I talked about it earlier today, about almost half of U.S. families can't afford the basics. And, you know, it seems like, you know, we got this great economy is what we're told all day in and day out. And of course, the economy is measured by the stock markets. As long as the stock markets are high, everybody thinks the economy is just chugging along just fine. But Americans are still struggling to afford a basic middle-class life. Nearly 51 million households don't earn enough to afford a monthly budget. And that includes housing, food, childcare, health care, transportation. And this one really bugs me that they even included it in something that is important as a cell phone. I can't deal with cell phones and food, you know, cell phones and a roof over your house, you know, but they included that in this monthly budget.
So I'm guessing because so many households probably no longer use landlines anymore. That might be it, but whatever the reason.
It just irritates me. But anyway, nearly 51 million households don't earn enough. That's according to a study that was released, and I'm not a fan of United Way, but it's their ALICE project. The 51 million equates to 43% of households in the United States. I mean, these numbers are just unbelievable. The figure includes the 16.1 million households living in poverty, as well as the 34.7 million families that the United Way has dubbed ALICE, which means asset limited, income constrained, employed. This group makes less than what's needed to survive in the modern economy. Despite seemingly positive economic signs, the ALICE data shows that financial hardship is still a pervasive problem, and that the Stephanie Hoops, the project's, that's what she said, Stephanie Hoops, the project manager of this study.
Yeah, these states, California, New Mexico, and Hawaii, have the largest share of struggling families at 49% each. North Dakota has the lowest at 32%. Many of these folks are the nation's child care workers, home health aides, office assistants, and store clerks. And they tend to work lower paying jobs, and they have little to no savings. That was noted by the study. Almost two-thirds of jobs in the U.S. pay less than $20 an hour. The study also drilled down to the county level. For instance, in Seattle's King County, the annual household survival budget for a family of four, that includes one infant and one preschooler, in 2016 was about $85,000. That would require an hourly wage of $42 plus per hour. But in Washington State, only 14% of jobs pay more than $40 an hour. There's some pretty stark figures, Melody.
Yes, there are.
Now, on a related subject, you know, in reality, you know, most people pick up multiple jobs, not just their one main job, because they can't afford to make ends meet. Nearly 70% of people who become what this article characterizes as side hustlers are doing so for financial reasons, according to this report by automated investment platform Betterment. The study was based on surveys with 1,000 people aged 25 and older who work in the so-called gig economy, you know, where people make money on projects like digital apps and work in their own schedules, most of them from their own home. A lot of people hit on the freedom or flexibility of it, said Nick Holman, who's a senior financial planner at Betterment. But for most of the people I speak with, it's a means of income for them. A shortage in retirement savings is what drives about a third of the people to work more than one job, the survey found. Nearly a quarter of people who pick up side hustles on top of their full-time job say they have less than $1,000 saved for their golden years. And as people age, Melody, those additional jobs become all the more crucial. More than three-quarters of people over age 55 in the gig economy are leaning on their side jobs to save for old age, this Betterment finding reveals.
Well, you know, even with the people working more than one job, about 70% of the people who work full-time in the gig economy still say they're unprepared to maintain their current lifestyle. 20% say they'll still need to put in some amount of work in their retirement, which is, you do have to work through your retirement. Debt is another major reason people clock into multiple jobs. Over 70% of side hustlers are working to pay off debt, and more than 15% of them are more than $50,000 in arrears.
And that's not excluding mortgages or including?
Excluding mortgages.
Oh, wow.
More than 40%, I can't believe over 70% of the side hustlers and 15% of them are more than $50,000. So those are staggering numbers.
Yeah.
More than 40% of people take on a second job to pay off their credit card debt, and more than a third to do so to repay their education. Other people report needing to look for more than one paycheck because of their bills. And again, these are just signs. These numbers are signs that, you know, wages aren't rising, quality jobs aren't there, inflation or dollars buy less, takes more of those dollars to survive. Your health care is rising, your cell phone. But did you ever think people would pay? I mean, what do you pay for a cell phone? And they update them as soon as the contracts expire, if not sooner.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I thought you'd get it for like $30 a month with unlimited data per phone. And it's something like that. Jeez. I mean, the article's certainly consistent with, you know, the total personal debt of over $19 trillion that you talk about all the time on this show. You know, that includes over $1 trillion in credit card debt alone. So it is shocking on the one hand, but not surprising.
No. We've had American companies are investing in their own stocks. Again, we have buybacks among the S&P 500 index members. They hit a record in the first quarter, and more than a third of the index raised dividend payments. Corporations have returned $992 billion to shareholders in the past 12 months, almost $1 trillion. At the current rate, 2018 will mark the first year that corporate America showers investors with more than $1 trillion.
Wow.
How companies use record levels of cash have become a hot-button issue after the Republican tax overhaul brought in hundreds of billions of dollars of relief to the corporations. So it's not trickling down to the people. It's going to the shareholders. The buyback spree bolsters a bull case for stocks at a time when rising bond yields diminish their attractiveness. We also turns out that companies are so flush they can boost spending on both activities. First quarter spending on capital expenses jumped 21% to $159 billion. That's a record for any start of the year. Cash remains near or at its highs, giving companies the ability to do whatever they want.
Whatever. Yeah, well, what do they want to do with that cash? Well, the added impulse from corporate buying came as stocks entered the first correction in 2 years, and the S&P notched its worst quarter since 2015. Here are some highlights of at least S&P 500 companies' use of cash during the first quarter of this year. $1.6 trillion cash and cash equivalents stayed near at all-time highs. Share purchases surged 34% to a record $178 billion. That surpassed the previous peak of $172 billion reached in 2007. Tech companies accounted for about a third of total buybacks, with repurchases more than doubling from a year earlier. I believe that article may have said Apple led the way with over $20 billion in buybacks. Financial firms spent roughly the same as last year, a sign that Fed-approved buybacks may have been fulfilled. And no company, I think this is notable, no company in the S&P 500 cut its dividend for the first time in at least 15 years. And among those that raised payouts, the increase averaged 10%. Things are good on Wall Street, Melody, or so it appears.
Yeah, I mean, the fundamentals doesn't have anything to do with the economy. It's all about how much money was repatriated back and the tax cuts that could go back in there to keep it looking like everything is great. Because, again, everybody thinks we have a great economy if those stock market prices remain high. Yeah. And that's the illusion that they've created. And but someday the reality will come home, and then we'll get the real value. Then we'll get the real value of what these shares should really be. You don't hear anyone really talking much about Jerome Powell. And you know that guy that replaced that white-haired lady?
Flying below the radar, he is.
Buddies, all the other Fed presidents are coming out and doing all his talking, but he's been relatively quiet, I think, but his top deputies are edging toward a clash that could shape the pace of interest rate hikes coming in these next months, as well as how the Fed should prepare for and combat the next economic downturn. The fault lines are technical as well as philosophical, and include a debate over whether the economy has shifted into a higher gear. This is going to give the Fed some room for more interest rate hikes, and maybe reducing the need for controversial tools that bond buying to fight future recessions. That's their plan anyway. They come as tax cuts that we talked about and government spending boost growth and inflation. This is going to give the policymakers some breathing room to debate whether they should retool the basic policy approach, which would give themselves more firepower, even if the slower future economic growth is unavoidable. You had a couple of Fed presidents speak lately. John Williams out of San Francisco, he launched He went into a debate this week. He gave a speech underscoring his view that the Fed has only a few more rate hikes ahead of it before rates reach a level of borrowing costs that allows the economy to coast along without stimulating or slowing its progress. This neutral rate, which can only be estimated, not observed, serves as a sort of speed limit on interest rate hikes and is at the heart of the current policy debate. He also said it's important to distinguish between the current strong economic conditions and those key longer-run drivers underpinning the interest rates. And we're just about out of time for the we do gold, and I really wanted to get to the logic about so we'll make sure, and we'll talk about there is no logic to the recent drop in gold prices. I touched on it a little bit throughout the week as we saw the pressure on it, and the fundamentals for gold and silver still intact. They haven't changed. They're only stronger and stronger than they've ever been. And remember, the role of gold is a safe haven, and in that sense, it's always a good time to buy gold, and particularly in the crazy world that we live in. But we got about 45 seconds left. I want to remind listeners to call Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And visit the website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. Dave, are you going to be back on Monday?
Melody, I will be here.
All right. Well, I sure hope so. And I look forward to spending the hour with you. So we'll be back on Monday. That's all the time we have for today's show. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. Have a great weekend. Be safe and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.